Is what?
First mitzvah.
Why?
Because that's the first mitzvah that Avram did.
Okay, very good, very good, 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 good. So we'll get to that. It's a good point. We'll get to that. Okay. So essentially, you know, the psukim describe that these people, the nations of the world, the nations of Eretz Canaan, I should say, were, you know, totally like they got the wind knocked out of them by this incredible miracle, and they're scared stiff. It's almost, I mean, obviously the pasuk is exaggerating here, as the Mitzudas David says, you know, explicitly, v'lo haya bam od ruach. It doesn't mean they died literally, right? But it means it's like they got the wind knocked out of them. You know, they were so scared, they were so in such shock about what had just happened, that they were like paralyzed almost. B'nai Yisrael shouldn't be scared, just like the Malbim actually makes this connection to Shimon and Levi, like Erwin said. And this is really what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to accomplish. The Malbim also points out that if you look back, you probably don't even have to turn a page, but if you look just at the last pasuk in the fourth perek, right, perek Dalet pasuk Chav Dalet, what do we see? What do we say there? So at the very end, we describe the miracle that Hashem dried up. I guess we do have to turn a page. That Hashem dried up the Yarden. And what does the pasuk say? L'ma'an da'as kol amei ha'aretz asher yad Hashem, es yad Hashem ki chazakahi. So that all the nations of the world will recognize that the hand of Hashem is mighty. L'ma'an yirasim es Hashem elokechem kol ha'yomim. Right, the nations of the world will recognize Hashem's might. And that's exactly what we start with in Parakei. That's exactly what happened. Right, so the last pasuk in Perek Dalet and the first pasuk in Perek Hey really are two sides of the same, you know, two sides of the same coin. You know, Hashem says this is what's going to happen. Perek Hey, we say that's exactly what happened.
Where does it say that Bnei Yisrael was scared to do the milah? They
doesn't say. No, it doesn't say. It doesn't say. The Mefarshim say this. The Al Sheikh says it. You know, specifically, he says that perhaps that's what was going on here. That Hashem wanted to reassure them and say, "Don't be scared." Right? Don't be scared. That you know, it's interesting. The Malbim also mentions, and this is also related to Shimon and Levi. Another reason why they were scared, not just that they were scared that, well, how are we going to go to battle if we're weak, but also if we're in a weakened state, what's going to happen to us? Because people are going to hear, the nations of Canaan are going to hear that we're here, right? And all of a sudden they hear that we're all incapacitated. Perfect. They're going to come and trounce us, right? Forget the upcoming battles to conquer Eretz Israel. Before we conquer Eretz Israel. As soon as they hear that we all got a bris milah, now we're all lying down on our stretchers, you know, they're going to come and just wipe us out. So that's also related to Shimon. That's exactly what Shimon and Levi did. So here, you know, we're saying, Kodesh Baruch Hu says to them, don't worry. So let the Mefarshim say it. The Psukim don't say it explicitly. Yeah? We'll talk about it. We're going to get into that right now. We're going to get into the whole milah business right now, yeah.
And the nations of the world know all this. They know that they get the bris milah.
Again, you know... Again,
the nations are going to find them. They had spies that were watching.
Yeah, you know, they're going to see them. I'm sure they had people with binoculars, you know, watching what's going on. If they see all the men lining up and, you know, getting a bris milah and everybody's, you know, out of commission, they'll notice. You know, when you have something like this, you know, word spreads quickly. But
it's not like today. I mean,
correct. Yeah, but how do they know about the Yarden? Right? Obviously, one guy saw what happened and he hightailed it back to the city and told everybody and it spread like wildfire. You know, so
they
it's
knew they were coming to attack them. Yeah, they were watching them for a while already.
Yeah, you know, they probably had spies. They probably had people, you know, in the mountains and watching what was going on. You know, again, they didn't have Facebook. You know, it didn't spread instantaneously, but you know, it still spread relatively quickly, I guess. Okay, so let's go to Pasuk Beis, and here's where we start the whole business with the Mila. Pasuk Beis, the Navi tells us, Ba'is Hahi, at that time, Amar Hashem al Yehoshua, Hashem says to Yehoshua, Asei lecha charvos tzurim. Interesting language, but let's assume for right now that it means fashion for yourself sharp knives. Okay, let's assume that that's what we mean right now, sharp knives. Vishuv mol es b'nei Yisrael shenis. And now I want you to go and give b'nei Yisrael a bris milah shenis for a second time. Okay, so now, you know, you read the pasuk without any mefarshim. You don't know what's going on. You know, what do you mean a bris milah second time? What does that mean? So everybody already had a milah? You know, everybody already had a bris milah, and now they're getting a second bris milah? Right? First of all, that's impossible.
They were kind of committed.
I'm sorry?
They were committed to do a bris milah before they had the Korban Pesach.
When was that?
It was in the train. No.
Okay, so, and but are those people still around? Exactly. Right. Okay. So Rashi here.
120 was still around.
Exactly. So this is what the Mefarshim discuss. All the Mefarshim discuss all these, you know, all these details. But essentially, essentially, the Rashi mentions here, and we'll see as the Pesukim go on, the Mefarshim talk, you know, about all of these details in the Pesukim, in the coming Pesukim. But Rashi says it right out here at the beginning. And again, we'll talk about it as we go through the Shia. But Rashi says that that these people did not have a Mila. Right? The people that were around now did not have a Mila. Okay, by and large. We'll see there were some exceptions. Now, why did they not have a Mila? Why didn't they do the Mila in the desert? For 40 years, they didn't do a Mila in the desert. Right? So why didn't they do a Mila in the desert?
They never knew when they were going to travel.
Okay, so that's one option. But Rashi doesn't say that. Some of the Mefarshim say that. So some of the Mefarshim say they didn't do a Mila because they didn't know exactly when they were going to travel. Right? They always could have been on the go. HaKadosh Baruch Hu at any moment could tell them, okay, it's time to get up and go. And if you just had a Mila, right, how are you going to just get up and go? You can't just get up and go. And in fact, the Gemara says that the third day, you know, is the most painful and it's a sakana. And the Gemara says it's a sakana for a person after a Mila to travel. So how are they going to do that? Right? So that's one reason that some of the Mefarshim give why they did not get a Mila. The second reason they give is, and this is a little bit less understandable for us, but the Gemara says, Chazal say in different places, in Midrashim and Gemaras, that after a baby gets a bris mila, there's a certain north wind. There's a ruach tzifonis. And this north wind is instrumental in healing the baby. Okay? Now again, I can't claim to understand this, but this is what Chazal say, right? Right? You didn't learn about this in medical school? Okay, I don't know. But there's a north wind, right? There's a north wind. Again, we don't know what happens on a metaphysical level. You know, we don't know how these things work on a spiritual level. So Chazal say there's a north wind that is instrumental in healing the baby. Now, in the desert, there was no north wind. Right? In the desert, there was no north wind. So Chazal say that was part of the problem. So in addition to the problem that they did not know when they were going to travel next, and they didn't want to get caught, you know, being in pain and in a dangerous situation having to travel, they were lacking this healing north wind. So it was a sakana. So since it was a sakana, it was a danger. Literally, it was a danger to get a bris mila. So for the 40 years in the Midbar, they didn't get a bris mila. Right? They didn't get a bris mila. Now,
Mitzrayim, yeah. They give the kids bris
mila. Good. Okay. So that's another interesting discussion that all the Mefarshim talk about here. And it seems to be that it's a machlokas. Right? There were some, the Radak refers to like two opinions about what happened in Mitzrayim. So there are those that are the school of thought that in Mitzrayim, they got a bris mila. Right, they got a bris mila. There are others who say that they did not get a bris mila in Mitzrayim. And they bring rayos from different psukim, they bring different proofs from different psukim about the fact that they didn't get a bris mila. One of the rayos they bring is actually a pasuk that we recite at a mila. Right, b'damayi chayi, b'damayi chayi. And Chazal say, what are these, why does it repeat blood? B'damayi chayi, you should live by the blood, live by the blood. Why do you say that twice? Well, why the repetition? So Chazal say, one is referring to dam mila, the blood of mila. And the other was referring to the blood of the Korban Pesach. Why are the two mentioned together? Because at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, they say the people did not have a bris mila. Because during Mitzrayim, they didn't get a bris mila for whatever reason. Maybe the Mitzrayim didn't let them, and this is one of the... Even though it's interesting, because it seems to be that mila is one of the things that we always held on to. Right? That even though you had governments who came and persecuted us, and in times of Hanukkah, Antiochus commanded us that we're not allowed to get a bris mila, and still people did it. People did it in hiding. People did it in secret. You know, that's like one of the things that we always held on to was the bris mila. So, according to this approach in Mitzrayim, this was one of the things that fell by the wayside. You know, people did not have a bris mila. Now they're about to leave Mitzrayim. They're going to bring the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach. The Torah says explicitly, the chol arel lo yochal bo. You can't participate if you're an arel, if a person doesn't have a bris mila. So right before they left Mitzrayim, everybody got a bris mila. Talk about, you know, you're traveling then also, right? Right, but before they left Mitzrayim, they got a bris mila. They brought they had the Korban Pesach, and that's what they did at that time. So there's a difference of opinion as to what exactly happened in Mitzrayim. So the Mefarshim explain essentially that what happened here. So what happened here was that you had, let's say, the people coming out of Mitzrayim all had a bris mila, because they got a bris mila right before the Korban Pesach. Now, at the time of, during the Midbar, there were no new milas, for whatever reason, either because of the traveling or because of the lack of the north wind, right? Now, at the time of the Meraglim, what happened? The Meraglim sinned in the Midbar, And that generation was destined to die in the Midbar. Right? They were told, they're not going to come into Eretz Yisrael. We're going to read some of the psukim that allude to these ideas. Right? But I'm just kind of painting the picture for you based on the Mefarshim here. So, you're not going to come into Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Now, that decree was for what age bracket? 20 and older. Right? 20 and older. 20 to 60. Right? That was the decree for that age bracket. That means all the people from 20 and up died out in the Midbar. Okay? Anybody under 20 was still alive at the time. Now they're coming into Eretz Yisrael. So now they're coming into Eretz Yisrael. Anybody who was 20 or older at the time of the Meraglim is now gone. Right? Is gone in the times of Yehoshua. They're not here anymore. The only one that's around is Yehoshua. Right? And Kalev. That's it. You know, no one else is around. Right?
They were really until 21 because the last star didn't die.
I'm sorry?
The last year they didn't die.
No, they made
the last
went,
year
they
of what?
Went
yeah.
into the graves, but yeah, they yeah, didn't yeah. die. So it's really 21.
The last generation before they went into Eretz Yisrael, you mean?
Not generation. The last year. The 40th year, they didn't die.
Right, okay, fine. Right. They thought they were going to.
Right. They
okay,
went
right.
into the graves, but they never
okay.
they got up.
Okay, fine,
it's
whatever.
Like,
okay, 21, whatever it is. 20, 21, the Mepharshim here say 20. Okay, so let's say 20 or 21, whatever it is. So all those people are gone. All those people are gone. Anybody under 20 is still alive. Okay? Now, people that were under 20 at the time of the Meraglim, they got a Mila coming out of Mitzrayim. Right? So those people still had a Mila at this point coming into Eretz Canaan.
Born after Mitzrayim.
But anyone born in the Midbar did not have a Mila. Right? So there was one group of people that had a Mila. There was another group of people that here totally did not have a Mila. Okay? So that's how the Mefarshim here paint the picture. Now there's one other group of people that did have a Mila. Now, who was that? Shevet Levi. So all the Mefarshim here say, Malbim and others, you know, they all say that Shevet Levi also had a Mila. Why? Because Shevet Levi, and this shouldn't come as a shock to anyone, Shevet Levi never gave up on the mitzvah of Mila. Even according to the opinions that in Mitzrayim, Bnei Yisrael did not do Bris Mila, Shevet Levi did it. Even according to what Chazal said that in the Midbar, people did not get a Bris Mila, Shevet Levi did it.
Well, you couldn't start with the Mishkan if you were not around.
True. Right? So Shevet Levi did it, no matter what. But even before the Mishkan, Shevet Levi did not. Shevet Levi never was mevatel the mitzvah of Mila. It's an interesting thing, and we'll talk about that, you know, as we go on. I'm sorry? I'm not sure. I'm not sure who the Moyo was. I'm not sure. Yeah, here Yehoshua is doing it. We'll see. Yeah. I'm not sure. It doesn't say who did Shevet Levi. I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure who was the Moyo. But, you know, I don't know. But anyway, so that's how this kind of shakes up here with the different groups of people. Now there is an approach. There is an approach in the Mefarshim. Not everyone says this, but there's an approach in the Mefarshim that there was something new that was being commanded here. It wasn't just that the people didn't have a Mila because of the Midbar, and that's what happened. Or you know, some say that there was actually a Chiddush in this Mila that didn't exist beforehand. And some say that we know the Mila has two components. There's the actual cutting of the Arla. That's component number one. Component number two is the peeling away of the membrane, which is called Priya. There's Mila and Priya, okay? And the Gemara says that both of those components are essential for the Bris Mila, and they're both actually called part of the Mila. They're both part, right, components of the Mila. In fact, when we make the Bracha at the Mila, so the idea is that the Moyel makes the Bracha of Al HaMila before he does anything, right? That's making a Bracha over L'Asiyasin before he does the Mitzvah. So he's holding the knife in his hand, he makes the bracha of Al Hamila, and then he cuts. And then the father, when the father makes the bracha of Lachniso Bivriso Shel Avram Avinu, that's done immediately before the Priya. So that's why both of their brachos are really before an essential component of the Mila. So some suggest that when Avram Avinu got the mitzvah of Mila, and this is not agreed upon by all the Mefarshim, but some of the Mefarshim suggest that when Avram Avinu got the mitzvah of Mila in Parshas Lech Lecha, he only got the mitzvah of Mila and not the mitzvah of Priya. But here, when this mitzvah was given to Yehoshua, that now go and be malvim pam sheinis, right? The Navi says, Molas b'nei Yisrael sheinis. So some of the Mefarshim say that there were actually two types of mila that were being done here. There was one mila that was being done for those who did not have a mila at all. That was a complete mila. That was a regular mila. The other type of mila was that now Yehoshua had to do a priya on all of the people that did have a bris mila. Right? All the less under 20-year-olds at the time of the Meraglim who had a bris mila, right? Already the way that it was passed down from Avraham Avinu, but that, according to this command now, was only a partial bris mila. So now the bris mila is now, in a sense, given in a complete way, and that's why Yehoshua really did a mila to both. Just to some of them, he did only the priya, the ones that were that already had a mila, and the ones that didn't have a mila, he now did a complete mila to them, mila plus priya.
Where did they get this idea that they didn't do priya? If the mitzvah is to do
right
mila and priya,
yeah.
How
do they know this?
Because Sheamus has to mean something.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
There's a long discussion in all of the Mefarshim here what exactly the word Sheamus refers to, right? So that's why Rashi is the first one who quotes it here. He quotes this idea that Sheamus is that there was a second mila for those who already had a mila, right? Now, what does that mean? How do you have a second mila for those who already had a mila? So that's where Chazal come up with this idea that, yeah, exactly, right. Now, there's probably also, you know, other proofs that they have for you know, based on Pesukim that I don't know offhand, but definitely this was an element of the Sheinis.
Question.
Yeah.
Now, how about, let's say, a ger? If a ger previously had a mila,
yes,
before he converted it,
right,
then during the conversion process, he needs another mila, right?
So that's what we call hatafas dam bris. What they do is hatafas dam bris. They take some blood, right?
Sheamus refers to that.
It's possible. No, nobody says that. I'm not sure why. Nobody says that they did hatafas dam bris here. The Mefarshim either say that it was a real mila or it was a priya. I'm not sure why. I mean, I think it's based on Gemara. There are Gemaras and Midrashim that seem to indicate this way. I think that's what it's based on. But okay. Okay, there's also something very interesting here. You know, why do we have this mitzvah now? You know, why specifically now, all of a sudden? You know, so we discussed already that part of the message that Hashem was sending Yehoshua and the Jewish people is that, listen, this is not going to be a natural battle, right? Even in a weakened state, you're going to be okay, because I'm going to be behind you, Hashem yilachem lachem. But why specifically now? Besides for that, I mean, it could have been Hashem could have, you know, done something else to them to make them a weak and say he could have sent them the message in some other way. Why specifically the mitzvah of mila right now? So somebody mentioned before, I can't remember now, maybe it was Joe, I can't remember who it was, that there's a connection between mila and Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, we do see that. We see in Parshas Lech Lecha, when Avraham Avinu is commanded, that's the first time that Avraham Avinu was sent to Eretz Canaan, right, which is today Eretz Yisrael. In that same parasha, he's given the mitzvah of Mila. Okay, and we find also in the Midrashim, they make a connection to the mitzvah of Mila. There's a Midrash that says even explicitly to Avram that if your children will accept the mitzvah of Mila, I'll give them Eretz Yisrael. And if they don't, then I'm not going to give them Eretz Yisrael. So we have a very clear connection, both in the Psukim and even more explicitly in Chazal, that there's a deep connection between Eretz Yisrael and between the mitzvah of Mila. Now, what's the nature of that connection, right? So that will explain why right here they're coming into Eretz Yisrael. The first thing they got to do is get a bris mila, right? What's the nature of that connection? So one of the Mefarshim, I think it's the Malbim. I'll just double check my notes. One of the Mefarshim says, "Yeah, oh, I'm sorry, the Ralbag." The Ralbag says this. I thought it was a beautiful idea. And I think that it really explains. He doesn't say this to explain this point, but I think you can use what the Ralbag says. The Ralbag, a little bit later, like in Pasuk Ches, I'm sorry. The Ralbag says that you know, Mitzrayim, he says, was known for as a country of lust. It was known as a place of, it was a very depraved, you know, country. It was a place where people did what they wanted. And they didn't have much, you know, they didn't have much thinking in the way of, you know, of morality and what was proper and improper. They did as their hearts desired. It was a very lustful place in terms of people's sexual desires. So says the Ralbag that Bnei Yisrael, right, specifically had to get the mitzvah of Mila because the mitzvah of milah represents and symbolizes self-control. That's what the milah, that's what the mitzvah of milah represents. The fact that we do the milah where we do it, that's the message. It's a message of self-control. It's a message that Judaism is not about abstention. It's not about not involving ourselves. We're not celibates. We don't, it's not that we don't involve ourselves in relations, but it's the fact that we have control. We have rules, we have regulations, we have guidelines, we have codes, we have systems. It's not just a ish kol hayashar be'enav yasa, that everyone does what they want, whenever they want to, because they want to. That's Mitzrayim. But Eretz Yisrael is different. And then the Ralbach says that that's why they got the mitzvah of Mila. This, in a sense, was a tikkun of Mitzrayim. And this is also perhaps why, again, he doesn't say this element, but this is perhaps why in Mitzrayim, maybe the mitzvah of Mila kind of fell by the wayside. Because if Mitzrayim stood for everything that was immoral, and everything that was all about sexual lust, if that's what Mitzrayim was all about, so it kind of makes sense that the mitzvah of Mila would fall by the wayside. But now you're coming into Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is a place of Kedusha. Eretz Yisrael is a place of self-control. Eretz Yisrael is a place where we recognize we don't just do what we want, but we do what, you know, we do within the confines of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands us. So perhaps that's why specifically the mitzvah of Mila was given at this time, because they had to recognize that, you know, we're coming into Eretz Yisrael, this is a different land. This is not Mitzrayim. This is not just everybody does what they want. We have guidelines, we have regulations, we have moral codes, we have things that are proper and things that are improper, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. That's what we have to recognize when we come into Eretz Yisrael. So that's perhaps based on that Ralbag, one idea of why they got the mitzvah of Mila. Another possibility, and this is based on the Radak, the Radak says that perhaps the reason why they got a mitzvah of Mila right now is because, keep in mind, when did they come out, when did they cross the Yarden? What was the date? Yud Nisan. Right? So it was Yud Nisan, so it was right before Pesach. Okay, they're coming into Eretz Yisrael, it's literally right before Pesach, you know, so they got to bring the Korban Pesach. And they didn't bring the Korban Pesach, if you remember, they brought the Korban Pesach in Mitzrayim as they left, they brought the Korban Pesach in the second year in the Midbar, and that was it. They didn't bring the Korban Pesach throughout the rest of the time in the Midbar. So now, says the Radak, that they're going to bring the Korban Pesach again, and in fact he says that they must have started, you know, it doesn't say this in the Pesukim, but he says they must have started the purification process. Everybody's Tamei. They must have started the purification process in the Midbar before they crossed the Yarden. And now they're in the middle of the purification process so that they'll be Tahor for Yud Daled Nisan, for Erev Pesach, when they come into Eretz Yisrael, and they can bring the Korban Pesach. But says the Radak, they have to have a Mila. So in order to bring the Korban Pesach, they have to have a Mila. In fact, the Malbim says that the fact that it says Harvos Tzurim, right, he says the language of tsur means a rock, a stone. So he says they didn't use a knife, right, for this mila. They actually used stones, right? Why did they use stones and not a sharpened knife? So says the Malbim, because of tumah, because metal conducts, just like metal conducts heat. Metal conducts tumah, right? A rock, you know, a stone is not going to conduct tumah. So he says that they specifically use sharpened stone to do the bris milah and not metal to avoid tuma, because they're coming into Eretz Yisrael. They want to bring the Korban Pesach. Nobody wants to be tamei now. So he says that they actually did it with a sharpened stone. He's the only one who says that. Right? The only other time we have that is when? Tzipora. Right? When Moshe is traveling with his wife and child, and some of the Mefarshim talk about this incident here. Flint. You know, they used flint, right? So as they're traveling, Moshe did not do the bris milah. Okay, and it's interesting. Why didn't Moshe do the bris milah? Right, his son needed a bris milah. Why didn't he do it? So they were traveling. So some of the Mefarshim said that they were traveling. Right, so that's why they didn't do the bris milah. But Tzipporah said Tzipporah wouldn't hear of it. Right, she wouldn't hear of it. She said we have to do a bris milah, and she didn't have a knife on her. She took a sharpened stone flint, and she did the milah with that. So based, you know, again, that wasn't because of Tumah. They weren't bringing Korban Pesach there. But it's, you know, it's interesting similarities here between the two things. Okay, let's look at. By the way, I should mention, you know, once we mention this, so you know, it's clear that Bnei Yisrael were not punished for not doing a bris milah throughout the Midbar, right? Even in Mitzrayim, you know, we never find anybody, you know, any pasuk that alludes to some sort of a punishment or some navi coming in and telling them that they're doing something wrong. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu, presumably, if they were doing something wrong and they should have gotten a bris milah, presumably Moshe Rabbeinu would have told them that you got to get a bris milah. You're doing something wrong in the Midbar. Moshe didn't stop them, right? So it seems that it was okay that what they were doing. You know, they had a taina, and we'll see a little bit more about this also. Okay, so let's go to Pasuk Gimel. Vayasla Yehoshua Harvos Tzurim. So Yehoshua does it. He fashions these, whether it was blades or whether it was the sharpened stones. Vayamal es b'nei Yisrael el givas ha'aralos. And he gives them a mila in this place. It's interesting, the Navi refers to it as givas. Givat is like givat Shaul, givat Shmuel. A givah is a hill. So it's called here givas ha'aralos. Why? Because there were so many orlos, right? It was like a mound of orlos, because they kept, imagine, like all the Jewish men, they're giving them bris milah, so it was like a mound of orlos. That's why he called it Givas Ha'aralos. And Pasuk Dalet, V'zeh HaDavar Asher Mal Yehoshua Kol Ha'am, and this is the word that Yehoshua gave a milah to all of the nations of to the entire nation, Hayotze Mitzrayim HaSecharim, okay, so those who came out of Mitzrayim, the males, that everyone, again, Kol Anshei HaMilchama, here, what are the Anshei HaMilchama? Literally, Anshei HaMilchama refers to soldiers, but it doesn't mean the soldiers, because there was no battle, but it means those who were of age to be soldiers, those who were above 20, who were of age to be soldiers, they were the ones who died coming out of Mitzrayim, they were the ones who died in the Midbar. In fact, that's why that's why the Malbim says, this is why the Pasuk ends with Betzeisam and Mitzrayim. Why are we talking about Betzeisam and Mitzrayim? So it's based on this idea, because Mitzrayim, as we mentioned, was all about the lust. And it was all about the desire. It was all about sexual impropriety. Right? That's what Mitzrayim was all about. So he says specifically, Bederach Betzeisam and Mitzrayim, that we had to get rid of that. We had to get rid of that mentality. We had to get rid of that concept as we're going into Eretz Yisrael. Now it's interesting that here, who's doing the milah? Yehoshua, right? That's what the pasuk says. Pasuk Gimel Vayas Lo Yehoshua Chavosim Vayomah. Right? Pasuk Dal is Dehadavar Shemal Yehoshua as Kol Ha. Yehoshua did it. So some of the Mefarshim also talk about, why was it that why wasn't the Yehoshua's doing all this? First of all, some of the Mefarshim say
theoretically he couldn't accomplish all this. He had to have a shliach.
Okay, good. So some of the Mefarshim say that it doesn't, so some of them say that Yehoshua did it, but he had like a team working with him. It was Yehoshua and the Moyel team. They had a whole team of Moyel and Yehoshua and his proteges, and they were doing all the milas. Some say Yehoshua wasn't actually doing it, but he was overseeing. Yehoshua was the leader, so he calls it. It says it as though Yehoshua is doing it, even though he's not actually doing it. There are some Mefarshim that say Yehoshua was doing it, and again, whether he did it himself or he was leading the pack, so to speak, of the ones that were doing it, why specifically Yehoshua? So Mefarshim say that it had to be Yehoshua. Why? Because he was the only one of that generation. The generation that died out, Yehoshua was the only one left. And I think it's the Radak. The Alshich says something amazing here, fascinating and really mind-blowing. The Alshich says that of the two, Yehoshua and Kalev, who would you say was greater? You would say Yehoshua is greater. Yehoshua took over for Moshe, right? He was the next leader of the Jewish people. So says the Alshich that we find in Chazal, we find that Kalev was naturally a greater person. And when the Pasuk says that he had a Ruach HaCheres Imo, it's referring to Kalev. Kalev was never swayed by the Meraglim. Well, what happened with Yehoshua? He wasn't swayed either, but not on his own.
He needed extra strength.
He needed extra strength. Yehoshua needed Moshe's tefillos. Yehoshua needed the Yud added to his name. He was started out as Hoshea bin Nun. Moshe added the Yud. Ka Yoshiach me'atzas Meraglim. Hashem should help you, should save you from the plot of the Meraglim. Right? So naturally, Kalev was the stronger person. Naturally, Kalev was religiously stronger, more connected to Hashem. Yehoshua was a great tzaddik, right? But Yehoshua would have been, naturally he would have been swayed by the Meraglim. He would have been impacted by the Meraglim had Moshe not davened for him and had Moshe not added the Yud. So the Alshich says, that's why Yehoshua specifically had to be mesaking this problem. Why? Because he was really part of that chevra. Yehoshua was really part of that group. He was really part of that group that died out in the Midbar. Yehoshua really belonged to them. He really should have died with them, so to speak. Again, not should have died with them, but he was really naturally, his natural inclination was that he would have gone along with what the Meraglim had said, perhaps. But Baruch Hashem, Moshe recognized that, and Moshe therefore, davened for him, Moshe therefore added the Yud to his name, and therefore Yehoshua was able to withstand they have the moral strength to withstand the Meraglim. But he says that's why Yehoshua had to be the one to do the milah here. Because he was really part of that group, and he was the one who was going to fix this problem, so to speak, for their kids, to allow their children to enter Eretz Yisrael. Fascinating, right? That sometimes you have people, and this also, I think, is an important lesson for us, that sometimes, you know, we always imagine to ourselves, you know, like the Gedolim stories, the art school biographies, you know, we imagine that the Gedolim, you know, they came out of the womb already with a Gemara in hand. You know, that they were shuckling already, you know, in the nursery. Right? And very often, you know, when we actually read, you know, the stories, they were normal people. They were normal kids growing up. You know, they grew up, you know, all the, you know, these Gedolim, Rav Gifter, Rav Scheinberg, they grew up in America. You know, those were American. You know, they grew up, you know, following the Yankees or whatever, you know, or playing stickball, you know, whatever the case is. I remember I told this story once that I was sitting at I think I was studying in Israel for the year, and my father came to visit. He was staying at the plaza, and I went to the plaza to stay with him, and I was eating breakfast, and it was a mission from Great Neck, and there were some people from Great Neck there, and there was a woman who lived in Great Neck at the time whose father was an older man who was with them, and somehow he came with the name Rav Elia Svei, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Philadelphia Yeshiva, where Shmuel Kamenetsky is the Rosh Yeshiva now. So Rav Elia Svei was the Rosh Yeshiva. So this older gentleman was a guy by the name of Feinerman. So he said, Elia Svei. He said, I remember playing stickball with Elia Svei. You know, like that was, you know, he was Elia Svei. He played stickball with him. You know, it's okay. And then he became a Rosh Yeshiva. You know, he went into business and he became a Rosh Yeshiva. So it's, you know, but people, they started out as normal people. They had an incredible drive. They had an incredible passion. They had incredible diligence. You know, which led them, you know, in Siyata D'Shmaya, which led them to their success in Ruchnius and in Torah. But at the end of the day, they were, they were regular people. And I think that this is such an important lesson, this Al-Sheikh, that Yehoshua, as great as we see Yehoshua to be, right? The next leader of the Jewish people following Moshe Rabbeinu leads Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. You know, he needed a little help, you know, when he was younger. He needed a little help. He could have gotten swayed. He could have been pushed the other way. But Moshe saw the potential, and him and Moshe said, you know what, I'm going to daven for you. I'm going to add a yud to your name. And that helped him. And he was able to accomplish all that he accomplished based on that. But, it's, you know, I think it's an incredible, incredible lesson. Okay, let's do another pasuk or two, and then we'll finish up. So the pasuk, Hey, ki mulim hayu kol ha'am hayotzim v'chol ha'am hayilodim ba'midbar ba'derech b'tzeisam b'mitzrayim v'lomalu. So again, many of the mefarshim pick up on, if you read these psukim carefully, you know, you see kind of the double language. Many of these psukim have a double language. Kimulim hayu kol ha'am hayotzim, right? The people that came out of Mitzrayim did have a milah, right? They did have a milah, and now v'chol ha'am hayilodim ba'midbar ba'derech b'tzeisam b'mitzrayim lo malu. And the people who were born in the midbar did not have a milah. So again, some of the mefarshim say that Yehoshua is really doing something to both of them. And again, he was doing the regular milah to the people, to the children that did not have a milah, and he was doing a priya, perhaps, to the ones that came out of Mitzrayim. Pasuk Vav, Ki arbaim shana halchu b'nei Yisrael ba'midbar aton kol agoy anshei ha'milchama hayotzim mitzrayim. For 40 years, b'nei Yisrael was walking in the midbar until the whole nation, again, those who were of age to become soldiers, they came out of Mitzrayim, asher lo shamu b'kol Hashem, who didn't listen to Hashem. Asher nishba Hashem lohem levilti har osam es haaretz. And Hashem promised them, after the chet of the Meraglim, He promised them, He said, I swear you're not going to see Eretz Yisrael. Asher nishba Hashem lav osam, laseis lanu eretz zavas chalav udvash. You're not going to see it. That land that I promised to your fathers, you're not going to get there. Pasuk Zayin, ve'ez b'neihem ekim tachtam, their children, they rose in their stead, right? Instead of these people coming into Eretz Canaan, this generation, instead their children came in. Osam mal Yehoshua ki arelim hayu ki lo malu osam badarech. They're the ones that Yehoshua gave a milah to because they were arelim. They had not been gemalt in the on the way. And then pasuk ches vayhikashu tamu kol agoy lihimol vayeshu tachtam b'machane ad chayosam. And they stayed put. Right? They stayed put. They stayed. They sat and they healed again because again the Malbim says this was their whole concern. Their whole concern was that we can't get a milah as we're traveling, it's dangerous. So here they stayed put. And I'll just close with this one thought, you know, which the Malbim also mentions, you know, going back to what we mentioned, that Shevet Levi did get a milah. Right? All these people throughout their travels, they did not have a milah. Shevet Levi, they did get a milah. Okay, so what's the pshat? Right? Why did Shevet Levi do it? If Shevet Levi could do it, how come everybody couldn't do it? Right? If we're so worried about the danger, how come everybody couldn't do it?
They weren't in the Shibur.
I'm sorry?
They were not in the Shibur.
Yeah, but that's in Mitzrayim. So maybe Mitzrayim back in the Midbar, but in the Midbar that doesn't help us, right? So what about the Midbar? How come they weren't worried about the north wind? How come they weren't worried about the traveling? So the Malbim says that Shevi Levi said, we have a mitzvah to do Mila, right? The north wind, okay, so, you know, we'll figure something out, right? You know, Hashem wants us to do Mila, we're going to do Mila, right? So there's no north wind, all right, so we'll heal a different way. In fact, the Gemara says that those who are not concerned about the north wind, and nowadays when everybody does the milas and they're not thinking about the north wind, okay, so, you know, Shomer Psoim Hashem. Hashem helps those who ignore it. You know, don't worry about it. And what about the fact that you might travel? Says the Shevet Levi. Okay, so we'll do it. Hashem will take care of it. Right? We got to do what we have to do. Hashem will take care of it. And this, you know, you see the strength of Shevet Levi that throughout everything, whether it was, you know, in Mitzrayim, whether it was the Chet HaEgel, whether it was the Chet HaMeraglim, you know, the women in Shevet Levi, they're always the ones to withstand the temptation to sin.
Didn't Mefarshim say maybe, you know, Cherpat Mitzrayim, maybe that means like they were punished, the Chet HaEgel, the punishment for Chet HaEgel was that your children can't be circumcised, but since Levi didn't participate in the sin, they were still allowed to be circumcised.
Interesting. So I didn't see that. That's interesting. I didn't see that. But we'll talk more about Cherpat Mitzrayim next week. I didn't see that, but that's interesting. But it's just, you know, you see the sense that Shevet Levi had this sense that you have to, Mila Hashem Eli. And that was Shevet Levi. We have to do what Hashem, we know what we have to do. And the Malbim says the Jewish people weren't punished in the Midbar because they had a good excuse. There's no north wind, we're traveling. So they had a good excuse. And therefore Moshe could not force the Jewish people to get a bris milah. But that doesn't mean that the Shevet Levi is not to be commended for what they did. Because even though sometimes you have an excuse, but when you know something is right, you do it anyway. You know, when you know something is right, you do it anyway. And this is the lesson of Shevet Levi, that, okay, you know, Bnei Yisrael had a good excuse. You know, and sometimes, you know, you can't fault someone for not doing something if they have a good excuse. But there are people, there are those people that do what they need to do, even though they have a good excuse not to. Right? Even though they have a good excuse not to. The Gemara says you look throughout all the, you know, this Amora, that Amora. One Amora learned Torah even though he was wealthy. One Amora learned Torah even though he was poor. One Amora learned Torah even though he was sick. You know, you point to all these different Amoraim, nobody has an excuse anymore. Now again, a person sick in bed, can they ever get an excuse not to learn? 100%. Right? But you look at the Chazon Ish, who had terrible health throughout his lifetime. And look how much he accomplished, you know, not being a healthy person. You know, so if you don't have health, do you have an excuse not to learn? Of course we have an excuse. Right? Nobody's going to fault a person for not learning because they're not healthy or because whatever. But there's always those people who don't look for excuses. They may have the excuses, but they don't look for it, and they accomplish it anyway. And that's really the lesson of Shevet Levi, says the Malbim. Sometimes we need to do what we need to do. And even if we have an excuse not to, forget the excuses. Just put your head down and do it anyway, and that's really the message of Shevet Levi. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight.